Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Lee Cantor with Katie Galley, another episode of High Velocity Radio. But these are the most important ones we do. These are the Thought Leader Radio episodes where we interview the best and brightest doing amazing things all over the country. Katie, excited about this one?
I'm always excited for Thought Leader Radio.
This guy's from Colorado.
Yeah.
Don't you always wanted to go to Colorado?
I do. I want to go to the Olympic Training Center.
I know. That's your dream.
It is. It's one of them.
One of your dreams.
One of them. Yes.
Maybe Aaron can hook you up.
Maybe he can. Maybe he's the key.
That could be. So for today, we got Aaron Huey, and he is with Fire Mountain Residential Treatment Center, and he is doing important work in Colorado. Welcome, Aaron.
Thank you guys so much for the opportunity to speak to your listeners. I really appreciate it. And thanks for having me on. It means a lot to me.
Now, can you tell us a little bit about Fire Mountain? How are you serving folks?
So Fire Mountain is a minimum 4-month treatment program for children and adolescents starting at age 12 going up to age 17. We are a dual diagnosis facility, and what that means is we work with kids who are struggling with mental health issues as well as addiction. And to us, addiction is a very broad term. So we work with kids who are dealing with a lot, and anxiety, depression, maybe things are falling apart between mom and dad at home or have already fallen apart. Adoption trauma, spectrum kids, but we're working with the kids who have taken this experience, and it's really hurting. It's really harming their lives. School's not working. Maybe there's legal trouble. They're using drugs. They're cutting on themselves. The dysfunction has just taken over life. So they come stay with us. We do our interventions very deeply with a family. We're not what we call a dump and fix, where parents get to dump their kids with us and say, fix my kid, I'll see you in 6 months. Our families are with us multiple times a week, and we do parent weekends and parent coaching and parent counseling, and we really believe that problems are systemic and you have to address the whole system, not just what's going on with the child. So we have an incredible success rate, and the kids seem to do really well here. I'm not a lockdown. I'm not a tackle and drag. I don't restrain kids, and the kids make it through the days and make it through their treatment.
Now, can you share a little kind of maybe a 40,000 foot view of the challenge here? Like, what percentage of kids are kind of running into this situation where your treatment center would be needed?
You know, 15%, it's really interesting because I was discussing this with another expert recently. You have about 15% of kids who self-report self-harming, you know, cutting on themselves, burning on themselves. You have 22% who are self-reporting multiple times a week marijuana use. You have 8% saying they've tried harder drugs. You have 3% of that 8 saying that they're using hard drugs regularly. You have upwards of 5% talking about drinking. And then you get into the depression, anxiety, and suicidality, which are just going off the charts with this generation of kids who are suffering with it. So when you ask what's the percentage of kids, if I back up which segment of the population, the answer is a lot of kids, all segments. The phone's ringing every single day. We're getting calls from hospitals, from parents, from grandparents, from aunts and uncles, from schools, from education consultants, from therapists. It's a significant portion, and it seems to be that all teens are at risk, and we're looking at treating the ones who have jumped and ran down that at-risk path. And like I said before, life is just, school's not working, that, you know, they're addictions are daily and unabashed. The self-harm issues, maybe they're in trouble with the law now. Therapy doesn't seem to be landing, you know, going once, twice a week. They've had multiple hospital visits. It's worse than it was, and it doesn't look to be getting better.
Now, so you really believe it's worse?
Oh, it most definitely is. This new generation, they seem to have a suicide option that was something that maybe one or two of your kids at your high school, you know, committed suicide or something like that. Just here in our little town of Estes Park, there was one year that 9 kids, and this is a little town. Suicide is massive. I just posted a fact the other day. Every 16 minutes in the United States, or 16 seconds, sorry, every 16 seconds, someone is committing suicide in the United States. It's worse.
Now, is it, it's hard for me. I don't know if I can really believe it's, I believe you that it's worse in the numbers. The cause of it, it can't be the internet, social media, things like that, or video games. It seems like those are symptoms, or they're distractions, or maybe they're contributors. I think some of it is I don't want to make so oversimplify it, but I think some of it is there's not physical education in schools as much as there used to be. There's not this physical outlet that humans used to do, whether it was, you know, we were an agrarian society for a period of time. We were outside doing things with our hands. We're physically doing things. And now we're not physically exhausted anymore. So we're mentally have a lot of energy that we maybe kind of are attracted to these addictive things like social media, the internet. And then when you start getting in that world intellectually, you are now have the opportunity to spiral because now you're comparing yourself to other people online and everybody seems to be doing better than you are, or they seem to have it figured out and you physically don't. So then this is contributing to this. Are you seeing something similar?
So it's an interesting point to bring up because parents always want to know the why. And I can tell you pretty easily that 99% of the kids who are in treatment with us have trauma of some sort. Now, when we hear the word trauma, we're automatically thinking, oh, they've been abused or they've been attacked. And certainly a high percent of the kids that we're dealing with, especially the girls, are dealing with assaults and attacks of a sexually violent nature. But we got to remember that trauma is a much broader concept than just a physical experience that your brain can't reconcile or a mental experience that your body can't reconcile. Trauma can be your parents got divorced when you were 3 and you feel abandoned by one of the parents who's no longer in regular contact and it's created some developmental issues. Trauma could be a soccer accident or a ski accident. So trauma is a number one factor. Number two, when we talk about the video games and the internet and stuff like that, what we have to remember is that brains have not changed in the tens and tens and tens of thousands of years that we have been developing into human beings. However, the information available to those brains has. And so some of the things that a child can see online, an animal abuse video, sexual content of a very graphic nature, human-to-human violence, your brain doesn't know the difference between something it would see in real life and something that it's going to see on TV. So even a video game, those violent first-person shooters, even those video games are creating trauma in young children because their brains aren't ready to actually process that information, and they're being exposed to it too early. The drugs that kids have access to are much, even marijuana, is much, much, much more potent than it used to be. And I know that for a fact because back in my old drug-dealing days, the marijuana that I grew and then I smoked and then I sold was somewhere around 3-4% THC. I'm hearing statistics where a kid is telling me, oh, it was really low THC content. It was 22%. 22% when the average is 36 and they have access to 99% THC drugs, like in dabbing or shatter. So we're looking at a number of factors that are contributing. Now, certainly the internet and video games and social media does not help. And I love what you said about that profile where everybody's life looks better than yours. Yeah, no one puts their honesty, you know, everybody poops sitting down, but no one's going to post that. Everybody's going to only try to show you the best or the worst. There's none of that reality in the middle that gets posted. So that's tough. And anxiety is much worse than it used to be. More and more children suffer anxiety than ever before.
Now, is some of that, though, that the parents not kind of teaching their kids about resilience and how to cope and things like that, that the kids aren't prepared? There's a lot of, I think, over-parenting where the kids just don't kind of skin their knee or don't get the chance, and the parents are kind of rescuing them. And the first hint of any type of trouble, the kids just kind of collapse. They can't handle, you know, any type of hurdle that comes in front of them.
You know, I posted up a picture on Facebook the other day on our Fire Mountain page, or Fire Mountain Residential Treatment Center page, of a group of four adults in a gondola in Venice, all looking at their cell phones. So my answer to your question is, yeah, that's part of it, is that these kids are not resilient. They don't know how to be uncomfortable. They don't know how to skin their knee. And they all want a trophy for doing what we're all supposed to do. You don't get a trophy for cleaning your room. You don't get a bigger allowance for that. However, we also have parents, we have adults who aren't handling discomfort very well either. And this is what I mean when I say the issue is truly systemic. I don't believe in broken children. I believe in broken systems. You know, political systems break and social systems break and family systems break and school systems break. But children don't break. They're results of broken systems. So you have to treat the system that's in play on running the child. So if I have a parent that says to me, you know, my kid won't stop playing video games, I'm going to ask the parent if they text on their phone while they're eating dinner with their kids, because disconnection is disconnection. When we built these big houses with big fences right next to each other, I want to say that the children using social media found a hole in the fence. They're trying to connect. But if the adults can't put their phones down, if they can't charge their phones in the kitchen when they go to bed, if they're surrounding themselves with the electronics, pretty much think that's what the kids are going to do. So when we look at an adult environment that thinks marijuana is the bee's knees and is going to save the world, what do you think the kids are going to do with it? If the adults are all taking opioids because they've got a slight ache and that's what their doctor gives and they don't question it, well, what do you think the kids are going to do? So this is a systemic issue. We just work with the children who are suffering from the fallout.
So the kids pay the price, but in your system of treatment, you include the whole family. It's not just, I'm going to fix the kid, right? So if I'm bringing my kid to you, I'm coming along as well.
You better believe it. And I want to say, no, it's not just the kid who's paying the price. The whole family is suffering from what the kid is doing. Make no doubt, when your kid's ditching school every day and getting high, and now you got truancy court on your heels and you're paying fines and you're having to miss work because you don't trust your kid being at home alone, and as a form of punishment, you decide to take away their cell phone or something like that, and they threaten suicide. And mind you, I'm talking about the kids in my facility. That's a pretty run-of-the-mill story that I just told there. So you take your kid's phone and they threaten suicide. Well, that's taking your whole week out. And you're not sleeping well as a parent. And now your marriage is starting to suffering. And you're not going to the gym before work. And you're missing work. And now your boss is stressed and angry. And this is what I mean by the whole system starts to break down. And one of the things that we really coach parents on is making sure that they are not putting the sum total of the responsibility upon the child, because no child is actually responsible for a system. They're a result of it. And yes, if a parent brings their family here, we are in agreement out of the gate. Everybody's doing the work. The family comes to two-parent weekends. They're coming to Sunday dinners, which is we're trying to bring back the family dinner piece. They're in once or sometimes twice a week family counseling. There's a weekly phone call with the kid. There's twice a month parent coaching with me. We have a very intense parent intervention program, and I'm happy to say I love the parents of our kids here. They work their butts off.
Now, how does it work? Like, so what's the first sign? Some parents aren't even aware their kid has a problem, right? Or they're in denial about it.
Yeah, we have five signs that we like to point out to parents to say, look, this is worse than you think. And when a parent says, hey, my kid tells me that they smoke pot, you know, three times a month, what does that mean? I say, multiply it by three. Multiply anything that's going on that you know of by three, and you're getting closer to what's really going on. So the five things that we see when a parent is deciding that they want to contact a place like Fire Mountain is multiple hospital visits, the anxiety, the depression, the suicidality, overdoses, you know, violent outbursts at home. They punched a hole in the wall. They've threatened, mom. They've ran out of the house and taken the car, and it's ended them up in an adolescent psych ward for, you know, 3 to 10 days. If there's been more than one of those, you need to call residential programs and start shopping around. The second thing is, if your child's in therapy and the therapist is saying you need to look at residential, parents need to understand that therapists don't just fling that one out there. Residential programming is a significant investment, not just financially, but emotionally, mentally, spiritually, physically. And they don't just fling that one out as an every card. So if a therapist is saying you need to look at residential program, take a look. The third thing we see a lot is the legal trouble. The kid's ditched enough, or they've had a violent outburst, or this is their third time stealing something, or they've gotten busted with, you know, possession of drugs a couple times, or maybe they're dealing. And the legal troubles are starting to stack up. That's a good time to start looking at residential. And a lot of times that will actually help with what's going on in the court. And what I mean is, we've seen judges take a step back on judicial punitive actions when the child has sought therapeutic. The next thing we see is a flagrant drug use where you're, you know, or cutting, where the kid is saying, you know, I don't care what you think, and they cut themselves anyway, or they told you exactly how many times they've cut up and they've shown you their cuts on their thighs and their arms, but they're not hiding it anymore, and it really has become a daily personal, the word I'm looking for is coping mechanism. If they are flagrantly and deliberately using negative coping mechanisms like cutting, drug use, pornography, video games, internet, social media, because they just cannot deal with life, it's time to look. And the fifth and most important thing is, when your gut says, I think we got to look at this, that's a tough one. But we really ask parents, if you're not sleeping well at night, it's time to start making the decisions that are going to help you sleep. You have to take care of yourself first. And when the kid is requiring this much attention and care from you, and you're not a nurse and you're not a counselor and you're not a therapist, you're supposed to just be the parent, then it's time to do the thing that's going to help you sleep well at night.
Now, those are kind of the triggers to get involved with you and to come to a facility like yours or yours. Is there any signs that are the, you know, before all these dominoes have fallen, there had to be 20 other dominoes ahead of them. What are some of the earliest signs that there could be a problem coming down the road? Because by the time it gets to you, now this is a fire I'm putting out. This is a big deal now. This is not a little thing. There has to be signs at the very beginning that are saying, hey, this kid's on a path to destruction, but nobody knows it yet. So what are some of those early, early signs?
Well, you're going to see significant changes in mood. And it's hard to know which ones are normal adolescent development and which ones are not normal, abnormal, dysfunctional, because certainly all teens have a level of dysfunction, but we're looking for the changes in mood where it's aggressive. They're screaming things at you that they've never, ever said in the past. We're looking at criminal behavior in the home. By that, I mean you have found drugs in the home. They've stolen some of your stuff. You're hanging up clothes in their closet, and you find a little keepsake box that they've had since they were a little kid, but this time there's some razor blades in it, or there's some plastic baggies, maybe three or four, that's got residue of something else. You find a scale. The sexting, and make no mistake, when a child is sending or receiving nude photographs of themselves or someone else on their phone, they're promoting child pornography, and it is completely accessible out there on the internet. I have a few podcasts on my podcast about child trafficking and how pedophiles get their hands on our kids that I want parents to listen to. It is not something small. It's very big. If the depression starts up, if the anxiety starts up, and now they're missing school because of depression and anxiety, if there's a sudden change in their friends, if all of a sudden they've been outed from one group of friends and have a new group of friends, if you see anger issues starting to arise, and I'm not just talking about they're frustrated. I'm talking about now where there's holes punched in the wall, or they've broken a chair in the backyard, or they've made threats, bodily harm threats towards you or themselves. That's why I'm saying all of these things. If as an adult I just went out and did it to the manager at Taco Bell, these are criminal behaviors. But for some reason inside the home, parents want to say, well, they're just having a bad day. It's worse than that. These are signs that something's not going right. Something has happened.
Now, how do you help those parents that are kind of in denial and that rationalize, like you said, every single thing is a bad day, or I don't want to be the police. I'm giving my kid privacy. He wants to keep the door locked and blast music. I don't want to get access. He won't give me the password to the phone. I want to respect his privacy. I don't want to be that guy. I mean, to me, those sound just like cop out and rationalizations.
Sure, they are, and it is enabling. And one of the hardest things about being a parent is that feeling of isolation. Those fences that we built between our houses, those are emotional and mental fences as well. The biggest change we see in parents when we are working with them is when they attend our parent weekend. And I had parents, I had like 26 parents in the room, and I said, how many of you have had your child make a report, a false report to Child Protective Services about you because they were angry? And these two parents in the front row sheepishly raised their hand. And I said, don't look at me, look around. And they looked around, and eight other parents had their hands up. And they started crying. And I said, how many of you have had your kid steal their car? And 12 parents raised their hand. Parents don't realize that this is happening more than they think. It's not just happening to your kid. It's not just happening in your house. And the first thing I say to any parent who's wondering if it is, you have to get out there and find out. You have to connect with other parents. You have to start resourcing. It is the age of the internet. We have the sum total of human knowledge on our cell phones. For a parent to find a podcast like mine, which is called Beyond Risk and Back, my podcast is for parents, teachers, and clinicians who are working with teens at risk, who are struggling with their kids. There are mental health news radio. It's just an opportunity for you to listen to people tell their stories about struggling with their family. You have to resource. We have become a culture that gets so good at researching what's going on. And then when something happens at that level, oh my God, I found pills and I can't identify the pills, and I don't know what's happening, and I think that's marijuana. I don't know what that smell smells like, or I do know what that smell smells like, but I used to smoke weed and I turned out fine. Things have changed. People haven't. Brain chemistry has not changed. But what these things that our children are doing has changed. And parents need to learn, they need to resource. And if they feel like they're overreacting and they're doing something to make themselves comfortable, that's where my warning flag goes up. We have a saying, if you're giving a consequence and it feels uncomfortable, you're on the right track. And that's hard. We don't want to be the cops for our families, but we've got to be the parents. And I will say, as a parent, I have a 22 and a 23-year-old now. It's tough. I'm a step parent. I was a single dad. I struggled with addiction myself. My first wife and I, my ex-wife, she and I did a great job being separated, but we struggled at times raising our daughter together with the same. This is not easy, and none of us know what we're doing, and not asking for help is making it worse. So that's the first thing. Of course, I offer all kinds of programs where I lecture and we teach love and logic to parents of teens at risk. And there are ways to get help. But realizing that you need to do the research to figure out what this really is, that's the first step.
And also, isn't it accepting the fact that you're their parent, not their friend?
That's a tough one. It really is. And being a parent, like I said, it's we want to be liked by our children. And we forgot that that means that we're not necessarily respected. And I will tell you, of course I want my son and my daughter to love me. But more than that, I want them to respect me. I want them to be able to look at me and say, I don't like that he did that, but I respect that he held his ground. And it's hard, but absolutely yes. You're not their therapist. You're not their friend. You're their parent. And that means you do what's right for the family. That means that you do what's right based on your value system. That means that you reinforce your value system through actions, not lectures. None of us learned anything from lectures that our parents gave us. They learned through our actions. That means that we confront our own emotional issues and we confront our own addictions, that we set boundaries with ourselves and show our kids how boundaries work. That means that we have to face our own uncomfortable conversations around the dinner table without the cell phones, instead of eating in front of the TV, binge watching some new TV series. We have to reconnect, and we have to set the standards of the family based on a value system that is static, not mutable, depending on how we feel today. And we stop arguing with teenagers. I mean, my God, have you met a teenager? They are struggling. They're practically insane just because the brain is in such deep development. But I have to ask, and I ask this without fear to any parent listening, who is more insane? A teenager whose brain is in complete dishevelment because they're in development, they're using drugs, or is it the adult who's arguing with them? Who's more insane? This yelling at our kid thing, this thing's got to stop too. Learning how to have a conversation. Emotional intelligence must be modeled by the parents, and that's tough.
Well, it's tough, but it's necessary, and that's part of the job. I mean, the parent is the parent. They're not their friend. They're the ones who are supposed to be role modeling the behavior they want. Their job is to create a good human being at the end of the day. And, you know, the parent has to take that responsibility seriously and do the work it takes to do it and get the help for the kid and the family if necessary in order to get everybody back on track.
It's true. You know, in the heart, I say it's hard because I have a lot of empathy and a lot of sympathy for what our parents go through. But it's easier than we think to suddenly wake up one day and find out that your 13-year-old child in crisis is running the house. And A, the parents don't want that, and B, the child doesn't want that. The only way to get through that is for the parent to take the house back. And the child, whatever, when we don't control things, we manipulate them, because if we have the need to control everything, it means we're in crisis. Crisis and manipulation are the same thing. If a kid's in crisis, they're going to manipulate their environment. People who manipulate are in crisis. And so we have to learn how to take our homes back from children who are manipulating the environment because they are in crisis.
Right. And look, it's pay me now or pay me later. You know,
sweat now or blood later. That's it.
You know, do you pick your poison? Do you want to deal with a little problem or you want to deal with a big problem? They're both, they're one's a symptom of the other. And I'm sure at a glance, you can tell how the story ends if they don't take steps early on. I mean,
it's the worst ending you could imagine.
Right.
I have seen the worst and I have seen the success stories. And I can tell any parent out there, the worst is not something you get over. It's something you have to learn to live with. And no parent wants to live with the death of their child.
Now, what do you think that you're doing right that you have so much success when the kids and the families go through your program?
Well, first of all, it's that we do not deal directly with the results that the child and the family have achieved. And most of the world is in reaction to the results. Oh, you ditched school and now you're failing, and that's a bad choice. We make any choice we feel we need to make to survive our environment. I have seen kids addicted to suicide because it's kept them alive. And I know that makes no sense, but every time she tried to commit suicide, her whole family would show up to the hospital. And that's the only way she could keep her family together. And it's nuts. It's insanity. So one of the things that we do is that we go deeper than the results. We go deeper than the actions. And what comes before actions are emotions. And what comes before emotions are thoughts. And what comes before thoughts is the experience. If you do not treat the experience, if you do not get into the experience with the child, if you just focus on these are the results you're getting because of your bad choices. Drugs are bad. Drugs are bad. Oh, they've been hearing that since they were little kids. They know drugs are bad. They know smoking's bad. They know cutting's bad. They know suicide's bad. But they're doing it because something in their experience of life has logically brought them to the conclusion that this is the only way to survive. So we go much deeper than the results, the actions, the feelings, and the thoughts, because those experiences we have lead to how we think about the world. Second thing is not only do we use traditional therapies that have shown excellent evidence with recovery, we have our own version of the 12 steps that we redesigned for adolescents. So we have kind of that 12-step feel, but we also use EMDR, which is a very progressive therapeutic intervention. We use motivational interviewing, which has tremendous results. We're a very healthy program, exercises every single day. That's something you brought up at the very beginning. Exercises every single day. We have one of our peaks. We call it the four peaks of Fire Mountain. And these are the four program landmarks that will never change. Physiology first. You want to heal the mind, heal the body. You want to fix what's going on with addiction, fix what's going on with the body. It starts in the gut. So not just physical exercise, but gut health. Our food is very, very healthy. The second peak is real life school. We are an accredited middle school and high school. And what we teach in our school is applicable to this teenager the moment they walk out the door. This is the school of real life. So this is how to rent an apartment, how to get a job. This is brain chemistry. Our kids learn neuropsychology and neuroscience for their science class. Their English class is learning how to be a movie critic and a music critic. Art is very, very big. Our third peak is called Mind the Gap. It's the clinical intervention. It's where we are teaching kids between the emotion and the action, there is a gap that adults possess. Unfortunately, they don't always use it, but we have it. And teens who are struggling and in crisis are behind in their development of the gap between feeling and action. So our whole clinical intervention is designed to help them develop a space between how you feel and what you do. The fourth peak, and we believe it's the most important peak, is tribe. The community. A lot of programs like us give lip service to, oh, they learn community. There is nothing without the village. The individual cannot survive. At the most core Neanderthal level, we will never survive nature alone in the cave. Not one of us. Because we all have to sleep, eat, and pee. So that's when the saber-toothed donkey takes you down. So we all need a tribe. Our kids join the bear tribe. They're initiated into the bear tribe. They have to graduate from the bear tribe. There's bear tribunals every Friday. The kids have their individual tribunals with their families and support systems. and they are in tribe all day long. They learn the power of community. They learn the power of living in a community. They learn the difficulty of the global ego, the global consciousness. Your belief system will not change how the world works. Your discomfort. You don't like math? Well, the world's not going to stop teaching math because you don't like it. And the kids learn that piece, their roommate situations, their school situations. It's all about learning how to live in a group of people. Tribe is very, very important to us. So those four things we have found have a huge effect. And part of our tribe, I want to bring this home, we call the Stone Soup Theory. Family dinners. Everybody in the family has something to contribute at that meal. And it's time that families sit down at the dinner table. No phones, no TV. Sit your butts down. Make eye contact. Eat a healthy meal together every night. Every night. It's so important. And people our age, Lee, we did that. And I don't know where we lost it.
Yeah.
But that's something that we bring back. And I will tell you, being a facility that deals with kids in crisis all damn day long, there is never a crisis during a meal. Our meal times are the most sacred, peaceful events of the day. Three times a day for an hour. People connect and they eat. The staff, the kids, we sit together and we eat a meal. It's potent. So that's a big deal.
Well, what's old is new again, right? I mean, I think that the points that you're hitting are all things that I remember from my youth that were important, which for some reason, like you said, we as a society have decided to kind of take a break from. For some reason.
Well, it's not easy. That's why. It's hard. It's difficult.
It really isn't hard to have PE in school, to have art in school, to have music in school, to give kids a creative outlet. It really isn't hard. It isn't hard to make everybody have dinner together and talk about what's happening and put our technology aside. Those are choices that we're all as a society making. And for some reason, for decades and hundreds of years before, that was normal, and it's not normal anymore. And because of it, there's this crisis of our children that are really, these are cries for help. The fact that you have to exist is a cry for help. You know, I'm grateful that you exist, but I'm sure you'd rather you went out of business and not have this issue exist.
I do this work because the big man upstairs said, "Hey, guess what you're doing? Guess you did this to your community, so you're gonna fix it. And here's how you're gonna fix it." And I'm never gonna question that voice. But yeah, I would much rather own real estate. That seems fixing and
exactly.
flipping houses seems a heck of a lot easier. But this piece about it being easier, you know, I'm not gonna argue with you. We do make a choice to watch TV and eat instead of sitting down and making eye contact. It's not a cry for help anymore, though. It's a cry for contact. We're all starving. Every last one of us is starving for human contact.
Right, which
is what we desire the most.
And which is ironic that we have devices in our hand that can connect us to the world, but yet we are alone in our heads.
Yeah, it's because it will never, ever replace physical, intimate communion of just talking with someone and feeling their body and watching their body language and having a true human experience.
Right.
What we have online is not real. It's not, it mimics reality, but it is not the real thing. It has all the vibrations of it, but deep down in the center, it's ones and zeros.
Well, Aaron Yui, thank you so much for sharing your story today. It's an important one. For those who need your service and want to learn more, what's the website?
Well, first, I want to say I have a podcast called Beyond Risk and Back. That's a free way to get connected. Our website for our facility is firemountainprograms.com, and you can also find us on Facebook at Fire Mountain Residential Treatment Center. We've put up hundreds of support videos for families. My goal is to give as much help to a struggling family as possible. If I can't work with your kid, I want to give you the same tools that we give our families here in hopes that you can employ them. And please, anybody, feel free to give our facility a call to decide whether or not Fire Mountain is the right facility for your child and your family.
Well, again, Aaron Huey, thank you so much for sharing your story. It's an important one. I hope that if you have a child in need or your family is in pain, that you give them a call and reach out. And just to learn more what you can do, whether it's a fit or not, I'm sure Aaron wants to help as many people as he can by any means necessary, whether it's listening to his podcast, going to the website, or having a conversation. Thank you again, Aaron.
Thank you so much, Lee. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to your audience.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Katie Galley. We will see you all again on Thought Leader Radio.